And I welcome everyone to the Parsha class for Emor 5771. Emor is found on page 672 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash. It's a single Parsha every year. And I guess that there's two major topics in the Parsha. One has to do with laws for Kohanim, the priests, many technical laws which don't particularly apply nowadays. And another major section is chapter 23, which is known as the section of the Moedim, the festivals. And this comprises the Torah reading for each, many of the Yom Tov days, some of them which we read on Pesach, goes through the cycle of the holidays, starting with Pesach and all the way through Sukkot. Now, just to reorient us to where we're at, we are learning basics this year. And if you recall, at the onset of our new series, I asked you, basics of what? And I specifically said this is not going to be basics of Jewish observance, which you know, would have been a reasonable approach. You know, what are the basic things I have to do to observe as a Jew? But I said that we're not really focusing or limiting ourselves to that. We are focusing on basics of the Torah reality. In other words, what is the Torah? What is it all about? What are the viewpoints? What are the principles? What is the hashkafa? What is the outlook? Philosophy, if you will. And that took us to many, many fascinating and different discussions having to do with faith in God and who our patriarchs are, who our matriarchs are, what's the purpose of all this, much more than just observing. Now, but we are at the point in the Torah, in the middle of the Parsha of Vayikra, where the Torah is telling us how to observe. So we are now faced with basics of observance, and to that end, I think that Parshas Emor in particular is really a continuation of what we started really at the beginning of the book Vayikra. The first two parshios were about observing the ritual laws of sacrifices, karbanos, which of course do not apply to us. They did create a paradigm for observance because, the first parsha tells us what the mitzvah is. The second parsha, Tzav, told us all the various halachos, all the various detailed laws of how to perform them. So it kind of created a paradigm for observance. But still not really within our frame of reference, because we don't do sacrifices. In Shemini, we started to discuss observances that we do. And the first one was kashrut, was keeping kosher. And so we called the Parsha of Shemini the basics of holiness. And the next phase in observance had to do with the use of our mouths and mitzora. Could we close that door, please? Thank you. Mitzora, which deals with the tzaras and the contamination and affliction that comes primarily because we misuse our speech. So, thank you. So that's a big part of observance. And last week we did Kedoshim, and Kedoshim is chock full of observances. And we call that the basics of holiness too, part two. And we realize that holiness is really about living. Holiness is found in the observance of real life. Holiness does not consist or does not is not found primarily in separation from life, such as in study and prayer and meditation. Holiness is concentrated in the way we live life itself. And that's why Kedoshim is full of full color living. And last week we wanted to emphasize four mitzvahs, four very, very important aspects of living which create, either make or break, our holiness. And if I can review them, they were based on the verse, a man shall honor his father and his mother, or man shall revere his father and his mother. That is the principle of respect for parents. Es Shabbosai Tishmoru was the observance of Shabbos. That was the second one. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, loving your fellow Jew as yourself, as that plus several other mitzvos related to, you know, interpersonal, people giving people the benefit of the doubt, judging them favorably, not talking badly about people, not hating them, talking them, if you have differences, talking it out, not taking revenge or bearing grudges, and finally loving your neighbor as yourself. That is a major part of real life, and that determines our level of holiness. And the fourth one had to do with marriage. And the entire last chapter of Kedoshim says these are legitimate marriage partners, and these are not. And you cannot commit adultery. A marriage means total faithfulness and focus on one relationship, and so forth. So, if the parsha which is titled Kedoshim, be holy, is not about karbanos, it's not about sacrificial law, which is in the temple, and it's not about separating oneself from real life, but it's about living real life according to Torah observance, which creates holiness. And I also paid a tribute to my mom, and I'm still waiting for the CD so that I can give it to her for Mother's Day. But that was Parshas Kedoshim. And I wanted to spend more time on each of these four because they really do warrant focus. I mean, this is like kind of what the Torah is leading to. All of our Torah reality boils down to the way we live. If I could, I did want to find some reading material that I could share with you. I found something on one of those four, the first one, parents and children, because I think that that's probably like where it all starts and ends, and it is the transmission of values, of Torah values, of Torah living, from parents to children, that really determine what kind of Jewish people we are. So if I could share you a little bit, it's a little shocking, but Rabbi Avraham Twersky has been around the block. He has turned 80, and he has written a wonderful, uncensored book about his views on the Torah and a Jewish life from this age. As he puts it, his children are married already, so he can say whatever he wants, and he doesn't have to worry about whether the Shadchanim are going to, censor. Yeah, say, yo, don't get involved with the Twerskys. So he says he can say whatever he wants. Plus, he has been around, and he has dealt with, and he has been a strong advocate and a strong, somebody who works on solutions for some of our situation. So let me just share with you, and then we're going to move on, because Emor, I don't think it's a different topic, it's the same topic. Emor is going to be the basics of holiness, part 3. So we're really just continuing Kedoshim into Emor. This is the basics of holy living. Here's something that Rabbi Swirsky writes. One of the radical changes I've seen in my 80 years is the behavior of young people. And I'm not here to preach. I'm here to just put this out on the table, and we have to look at this as a nation, as a community, as a people. Everybody here is as well as informed, if not more than I. And I just think that last week Rabbi Ilan Feldman gave a sermon to the Teen Minyan. He was speaking to teenagers and their parents, and he said that we've got to talk about, you know, parents and children. We've got to talk about how parents and children are interacting on both directions. Dr. Fisher probably has devoted much of his professional career to helping young people make choices and deal with family issues. So it's not in an air of preaching that I read this. It's more, these are the issues of the day that we have to address as a community. So one of the radical changes I've seen in my 80 years is the behavior of young people. When I was in grade school, there was no day school in Milwaukee when I was a child, and I attended public school. There was respect for teachers and reverence, if not downright awe, of principals. This was a reflection of the general respect for authority, which eroded and has all but disappeared today. I was asked to attend an emergency meeting to address the hemorrhage of our youth who desert Yiddishkeit and deviate from their family's traditions. The meeting was attended by representatives of the major Hasidic communities and yeshivos. Here are some of the remarks made by the various representatives. Do you think there were no kids at risk in my yeshiva days? Sure there were, but I did not join them because I did not want to lose the relationship with my father. Today, such relationships are weak. The father returns home late from work. His cell phone and beeper go off, and he cannot talk to his children. One child approaches him, "Tati," and the father says, "Can't you see I'm busy on the phone?" The child walks away. The relationship with the father has been dealt a blow. When there is no strong relationship with parents, children are vulnerable to attraction by the dangerous element. In the school, many children lose interest because the Magid Shiur, the instructor, is not talking to them. He directs his attention to the one-third or one-fourth of the class that he can engage in a discussion of the Gemara. The remaining students lose interest and feel that they don't belong with the smart students. Young people want to belong, and if they feel they can't belong with the smart students, they'll find companionship with the boys in the street. In my days, if you were unhappy in the yeshiva, there was nowhere else to go. Today, there is a whole society on the street. Many of them, you know, we're a young community, and in a large extent, we're sheltered. Mm-hmm. Many of them use drugs. A student unhappy in the yeshiva thinks he will find some pleasure in smoking marijuana. We are missing the boat if we don't make an effort to keep kids in the yeshiva happy. Yes, there may be deficiencies in the yeshivos, but the major problem is the atmosphere in the home. Today's parents are not equipped to deal with their children's problems. Life in the shtetl was simple, and even in America it was simple 40 years ago. But today, life is much more complicated, with television and internet and a society with poor morals. Young men and women are not prepared to be parents. Young people growing up in a society, even a frum society, that is pleasure-seeking, are at great risk of being attracted to behaviors that produce pleasure, and this is a major reason why the use of drugs among young people is so prevalent. For more than 30 years, I have been alerting the Orthodox community to the dangers of alcohol and drug use among our youth. Unfortunately, every so often, the community is made aware of a tragedy of a young person dying from an overdose, and there is a brief expression of interest in trying to do something about the alcohol and drug problem. But within days, the momentum fades. There is a tendency for people to bury their heads in the sand and act as if the problem does not exist. Things do change in 80 years, and we must be aware that some changes may call for greater demands on us. And finally, I have witnessed yet another change in my lifetime. My two older brothers learned in Masifta Torah Vidas, that was one of the yeshivas in New York in the 40s and 50s. If you asked them where they learned, they would reply, by Reb Shloima, referring to Hagon Reb Shlomo Hyman, Zatzal. If you asked a Lakewood Talmud where he was learning, he would answer, by Rav Aaron, referring to Hagon Rav Aaron Cutler. In other words, they would mention the name of the Rebbe. I am with Rebbe so-and-so. Today, if you ask a yeshiva bachur where he's learning, you are likely to get an answer mentioning the name of the yeshiva rather than the name of the Rosh Yeshiva. I suspect this indicates that the close relationship that used to exist between Rosh Yeshiva and student is no longer the case. It may be that it is because there are, Baruch Hashem, so many students in the larger yeshivas that a close Rebbe-Talmud relationship is logistically not feasible. Whatever the reason, it is unfortunate that so vital a relationship has become a rarity. Ask your father, and this is how he concludes the chapter, ask your father and he will tell you, your elders and they will say it to you. This is the way transmission of tradition was intended to work. In other words, person to person. You know, parent to child, teacher to student. Not an institution cannot impart values and tradition. So, there's like serious, you know, serious things to think about. And when we read in the Torah, and the Torah says, Ish imova aviv tira'u, that a person should fear his father or mother, or even, you know, as a Rebbe figure, the Torah means this is vital. This is vital for Kedusha. This is vital for living a life of holiness. So much for some of the elements of holiness that are taught in Kedoshim. Thank you for allowing me to finish up some from Parshas Kedoshim. But Emor is a continuation of the same theme. Aspects of Torah observance that are vital for holiness. Now I mentioned the priesthood. And I mentioned that the first chapter or two of Emor are really about priestly rituals that don't even apply. And we know that the priests they're not employed by the temple anymore. So why would I say that Emor is a continuation of life of holiness, which means real life, not life of separation, but life of holiness, of connection and living in this world, when the very first half of Emor is about something that doesn't even, not even practiced? The answer is, and we've shared this thought before, and this was something that I became aware of from my Rebbe, Rav Weinberg, who everybody in Atlanta had benefited from, was that we just have to shift our definition of what a Kohen is. When we read the Chumash, we think a Kohen is this practitioner who's dressed in white. And if he's the high Kohen, he's dressed in colorful clothing with the breastplate on. And he is to be found in the temple slaughtering animals and sprinkling the blood on the altar. And it has to be somebody that was born into a priestly family. That's not, if you strip down to its elements, that's not really what a Kohen is. A Kohen, in his real essence, is an individual who has chosen, it could have been in the old days, it was his family lineage that made him choose. Maybe he was chosen, but it really means a person who chooses to set aside many options of worldly occupation, which is normal for people to engage in, to choose, and to rather dedicate his life to studying Torah, teaching Torah, developing himself in the pathways of spirituality and the service of Hashem, and devote his life to the Jewish community. That is what a Kohen is. That's what a Kohen was then, and that's what a Kohen was 1,000 years ago, and that's what a Kohen was 100 years ago, and that's what a Kohen is in 2011. Kohanim have always been vital positions and roles in the Jewish community. And the Torah is saying, Parshas Emor, we are going to speak for a half of a parsha right in the midst of defining Kedusha. We're going to speak about the Kohanim, because everybody has to be aware of them, that we need them, that we must support them, and that through their involvement in all of our lives, we can achieve Kedusha. And without them, we are going to be groping around. Now, this is not a commercial. I'm not tooting anybody's horn. I'm saying this is part of the Torah, that we must have Kohanim, and we as Jewish people have to be involved, have to have Kohanim in our lives. And the reason why we do is because it is very difficult, as we know from everything that we've learned, to really focus on Torah and spirituality given all of the other distractions around in this world. And just like any occupation, if you don't have people that are experts, you're just not going to have it. If we don't have people that devote their lives to practicing medicine, we ain't going to have no doctors. And if we're not going to have people that devote their life to construction, we ain't going to have no buildings. And if we don't have people that devote their lives to Torah and spirituality, we ain't going to have no Kedusha. So it's just like everything else. And Baruch Hashem, Hashem has, you know, given us the ability and the, you know, and the desire, and it's an individual thing, just like a career choice. Any career choice is an individual thing, that you can become an expert in whatever measure you define expertise in Torah, so that we can have as a community Torah experts. And this is not just something, you know, that's for somebody else. It's for everyone. So that's why it's here. That's what it has to do with everyday life. That's what it has to do with Kedusha anytime. Not just for Kohanim doing Karbanos in the Mishkan. Okay? So is that clear?
Say it again. Hashem gave everyone what? All of us.
Hashem gave us in our Torah a parsha devoted to Kohanim, because everyone has to realize that a vital aspect of Torah observance and ultimately a living a life of Kedusha depends on our interaction with Kohanim, meaning with people who devote themselves to Torah. Okay? That means if you are a Jew and you don't have a relationship with a rabbi, with a teacher, whether it be, and there's, you know, various ways that can be. That can be through a yeshiva, that can be through a shul. But you've got to have a connection with people who devote themselves to Torah and spirituality if you want to live a life of Kedusha.
That's why we're here.
That's why we're here. Okay. And that's part of basics of Torah reality. I was going to read to you something. I won't read. I see I'm getting long-winded here, so I won't read the whole thing. But Rabbi Walda, in his brief introduction to the world of Torah, has a chapter on understanding the chain of sages. And he, he talks about Avraham. He talks about Moshe, King David, Hillel. A millennium later, Rambam and Ramban, Maimonides and Nachmanides. In the 1500s, Rabbi Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. And then in the 1700s, the Gaon of Vilna. His student, Rabbi Chaim Volozhin, who started the yeshivas. And then the Chafetz Chaim in the 1800s and 1900s. Here, let's read this. The halachic decisions of the Chafetz Chaim are universally accepted. All his life he scrupulously observed the prohibition against slander and derogatory talk. Hence his appellation, Chafetz Chaim, taken from the name of his work on slander. Once he was called to testify in court to save a pupil from a false accusation, he refused to take an oath, saying, "Never in my life have I spoken an untruth, but I cannot and will not swear in God's name." At the age of 95, he traveled to Warsaw to convince the Minister of Culture to rescind a decree that threatened Jewish schools. He told the minister, "In my youth, I wept when I saw a Russian soldier beating a Pole. That is why God has let me live to see Poland delivered." The minister, overwhelmed with his sincerity, granted his wish. When he took leave, he asked the rabbi for a blessing. The Chafetz Chaim blessed him, whereupon he burst into tears. The Chazon Ish is among the most recent of our great Torah leaders. We just quoted him a year ago. He lived in Bnei Brak, and he wrote a book on Emunah and Bitachon. He was also the first one of the early Torah leaders in Israel, in the recent Israel Jewish community. He is still remembered for his boundless love and humility. People from all circles and classes, religious and irreligious, came to him for advice and help, and all of them left advised and comforted. The collection of his letters testifies to his radiant personality. All our great men have this in common. They are each a manifestation of the unity of halacha with human perfection. If we needed proof of the Torah's divinity, this is it. This unity also shatters the theory of Christian and anti-Semitic theologians who try to draw a contrast between the religion of law of the Torah and the ethical religion of the prophets. They who split their own God into three cannot accept the idea that our law and our ethics are one, attested to by every one of our great sages in his life. Just think, I mean, where would we be if there wasn't a Chafetz Chaim? We could have read the book. He wrote the book. Why did he write the book? Because he cared about not speaking Lashon Hara. So, we can't live without the Kohanim. He happened to be a Kohen, by the way. He was a Kohen by lineage. But there's an example of where would the Torah be? It doesn't matter if we have the books. If we don't have the Kohanim, the books will just be closed. Where would Israel be without the Chazon Ish and all the subsequent great leaders? So the point is that Kahuna, the real Kahuna, is absolutely vital and indispensable for Kedusha. Okay. And that leads us to the last of the elements of basics of Torah reality, and that is the festivals. Now, we spoke last time about Shabbos, and certainly a commitment to Shabbos and Yom Tov observance is required to live a life of holiness. Certainly that aspect. But when it comes to the festivals, there's a totally different dimension that occurs to us when we enter into it. It's not just a commitment to adhere and observe the holidays and their restrictions, etc. It is a whole different entry into the dimension of time. For this, I would like to preface this concept by reading something from a great deep source, Rav Matthias Weinberg, I've shared with you on occasion, the son of Rav Yaakov Weinberg and the brother of our Rebbetzin Miriam Feldman. And this is what he writes in the very, very first chapter of this book. Now take a look at the artwork on this cover. And you will see something that looks like maybe two Havdalah candles. But what they really are spirals. And he writes about that in the beginning of the book. This is called Views of Time. The Torah's view of time differs markedly from the view of time long held by the non-Jewish nations. These perspectives differ as deeply as do Israel and those nations, and are an important component of what sets the two apart. To the nations, that means the secular world, time is a linear flow without relation to anything external. It's just a continuous passage of moments. It doesn't start anywhere and it doesn't end anywhere. It just continues. One instant of time is in no way similar to another. It exists as a separate point along an infinite line. And so does life, by the way. Given that definition, life is just a series of moments. You start here, you end here, and then life is over. To the Torah, time is a cyclic dimension which intimately involves the observer. The observer being us. The clock of the Torah, the perceived cyclic changes in the sun and moon, not only measures time, it defines time. This cyclic dimension does not consist of a simple circle. In other words, a cycle can be a recurring circle like this. It just keeps going around and around and around. That's one type of a cycle. But this cyclic dimension does not consist of a simple circle, of course. For then we would keep bumping into our past each time around. Instead, time is a spiraling cycle in which certain coordinates are the same as this last cycle, while others differ. Okay? I keep on going around the same, but something's happening. I'm moving. I'm revolving, but I'm also moving. Just as we repeatedly visit the same space location and not meet our previous selves, so we are annually exposed to equivalent time locations. The differences in our persons and in our history become an actual part of the measurement of time. You can readily see the dramatically divergent implications of these differing points of view, the view that it's just a line and the view that it is a cycle. To those who see time as unrelated points on a line, the calendar is a convenience, not a reality. Commemoration is an arbitrary mental review of romantic memories, seasonal associations. Somebody decided that every 365 days we should tell our spouse or our relative happy birthday or happy anniversary. But it's arbitrary. For those the nations tinker with their calendars as with playthings and move about their holidays at will. But the Torah envisions time as our contact with reality, as the definer of our environment and our spiritual attitudes and moods, the basis of the events which comprise our history and our individual lives. Commemoration is more than memory. It is a temporal reliving of those aspects in time which created events, feeling anew the associated moods and sensations. So, for example, when we celebrate Pesach, we're not just remembering Pesach, we are reliving Pesach, because Pesach occurred at a certain time, and every year we go around the cycle and we come back to that time, and therefore we are reliving Pesach. So the dimension that what this concept of Moed, of festivals, adds to our Kedusha, to our holiness, is that it is a new dimension which we live in. We don't just live in a place. We all live in Atlanta. We don't just live in place. We live in time. Right now, we are in the days of the Omer. That's where we're living. It's a time space. We're in Sfiras Omer. We're in the counting of the Omer. That means something. There's a reality there. Just like when we were celebrating Pesach, we weren't just picking a day and saying, let's get together and remember how our forefathers came out of Egypt. We were in the Pesach time space, if you will. And now we are living in the Omer. And a Shavuot time, we are going to be reliving the giving of the Torah. And on Sukkot, we are going to relive that culminating joy that comes about when people feel intimate with Hashem. And on Yom Kippur, we are reliving Hashem's love of forgiveness. So, it's creating a whole new dimension in our lives. As he says, Torah, time to the Torah is not only something we live within, it lives within us. We are a people through our calendar, a nation sanctified together with time. Okay. It's a major, major principle. It's a major, major principle of Jewish life. So again, holidays is not just a matter of, yes, I do have to commit to its observance and I have to take off work, etc., etc. It's much more than that. It's not just an obligation. It is a whole new definition of living. Living with time as a true impactor of who we are. What do we do when the festivals are over? What do we do after we've gone through Pesach? Right? Because half of the year we're busy. Half of the year, we're living in this time mode. We're going from Pesach, and then we have the days of the Omer, and then we have Shavuos, and then we go through the summer. Not too long. We have some fast days, but then we have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, then Sukkot, and then, from the Torah's perspective, from Sukkot all the way till Pesach is 6 months. Ain't nothing going on. What are we supposed to be doing then? How do we live through time then? That's what's called the winter zman in yeshiva, the winter session. The winter session is from Sukkot till Pesach, with a little break for Hanukkah and Purim. But the winter zman is a time to buckle down and to study and to grow. And time for us to invest. From Pesach till Sukkot, it is a time for us to get rejuvenated from above, from Hashem to shower us with the various emanations that allow us every year to rejuvenate Pesach time, to climb during the Omer, to accept the Torah again for Shavuos, to encounter Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur, to experience the joy on Sukkot. These are times when Hashem showers us with His emanations. And then when Sukkot is over, when Shmini Atzeres is over, after we've spent all of our energies and our love in the dancing on Simchas Torah, Hashem says, okay, you're full, your tank is full, now you have 6 months to plug away and to work on your own development until we get together again Pesach time, and I will shower you again and give you another dose of that wonderful cycle. So if a Jew lives in time, in the time of Torah, that's major for living Kedusha. So I think those are two new major aspects of living a Torah life. You've got the Kahuna, which means that in order to be holy, we've got to connect with those people that are experts in holiness, and time is a dimension which we live in, which gives us that holiness. Plus all the mitzvot of Kedoshim, this is the formula. This is how we take all of the philosophy and all of the hashkafa, and we put it into practice according to the Torah, into achieving kedusha.
Thank you.
Shalach.
It's interesting. In those 6 months,
yes,
first 6 months we have all the biblical holidays, and then we throw in Hanukkah and Purim, which are really rabbinic. They're not biblical.
Right.
It's sort of, somebody came along and said, "You still need a little."
Exactly.
A little push.
Bingo.
For 6 months, you might get a little stale.
Bingo.
Throws those two biblical, those rabbinic holidays.
That's exactly right. The rabbis, as they always do, the rabbis help us keep the Torah. So they came along and they said, we're going to help you, you know, survive and thrive. Plus the fact that through history and through the advent of, like, you know, the experience in Persia with Purim story and the stories of the Greeks, we became maybe in need of some new doses.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.